So we'll get started in a second. Thanks to Jason Lefkowitz for filming our whole series here. And it will be available on YouTube. And YU Torah is also a wonderful resource for Torah in general that you can go to yutorah.org. So our course here at the Mary Hyken Dumont University, in memory of Mary Hyken Dumont, of blessed memory, our good friend of blessed memory, we've been talking about the cutting edge of Jewish ethics. So just to review a little bit, we tried to talk about, you know, on one hand, we have various Jewish institutions, such as synagogues and rabbis and temples and Beis HaMikdashes and all kinds of things. On the other hand, there are limitations in organized religion and to the extent to which it becomes a positive thing or it becomes a negative thing. We talked about even kindness and love, where, you know, tremendous values in the hierarchy of Jewish values. And even there, there are times when time for cruelty, where kindness is not in place. And then we talked a little about the limitations of truth-telling. Tonight, I want to talk about the boundaries of Jewish spirituality, the boundary between material and the spiritual. We might think that the material and the spiritual are two totally different realms. You have things that are physical, eating, drinking, our various carnal pleasures. And then we have the spiritual, prayer, Torah study, and the like. And it seems like they're very different realms. So here, rather than getting to the cutting edge of each one, we want to know about the blurring of boundaries between spirituality and materialism or the engagement with the material world. So as an example of how it's hard to say whether something might be physical and spiritual at the same time, we have the story of some of the elders, noblemen of Israel, in the story in Exodus. It begins here with a question. It's in Exodus 24. I'm sorry, it doesn't say. And there, Moshe and Aaron, and Nadav and Avihu, his two sons, those are the ones who were later killed, and the 70 elders of Israel, they go up to the mountain. So presumably they don't go all the way up like Moshe, but they went up to the mountain to some degree. What do? There, they had a vision of God. Vision of God. Apparently they saw his throne, his feet, so to speak, and some sort of image of some blue sapphire stones, and who knows, in other words, some sort of mystical image that really words can't capture. So it says something about a stone, but whatever that means. And then, on the noblemen of Israel, God didn't lay his hand. Now let me read this to you two ways. On the noblemen of Israel, who are the noblemen? The people who just went up. God didn't cast his hand. He didn't smite them. Why would he have smitten them? Because they had a vision of God and they dared to eat and drink. Rashi, gaslibam, they had haughtiness that in the middle of a spiritual experience, they could, as if it was some sort of a television show, they could take out a beer and live it up in the middle of a spiritual experience. Take two. The elders went up to the mountain, and to the elders of Israel, the nobleman, he did not send his hand of the hand of prophecy to give them prophecy. They saw God, and they ate and they drank. Perhaps a prophet would be like Moses, would lose his physical sense. He would be off and wouldn't eat or drink at all. But they continued to eat and drink. They didn't have an absolute spiritual experience like Moses. They had a spiritual experience in which they ate and drank, and they saw God. So the question is, if you look at this and you say, someone had a vision of God and he ate and he drank, is that okay?
As long as you make a motzi.
Right. So that's so Joe steals the punchline for us. Right. Depends how in what spirit they did it. Right. Rashi says ghastly bomb, that they did the eating and drinking out of a sense of haughtiness. Some of the commentaries say, no, what are you talking about? You go in front of God all the time, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, and what do you do when you go there? for Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, to see God. What do you eat? What do you eat? The Paschal lamb, the holiday offerings. Every holiday, you have to bring an offering. You can't come empty-handed. What does that mean? You have to eat meat. And you have to rejoice. How do you rejoice? You have to drink wine. So even the ambiguity is right here, and that launches us into our question. How physical can you get when you're trying to be spiritual? What's the Jewish view on physicality within spiritual experience? So let's take the issue from a sort of a gradual point of view, and let's start with a negative perspective, that the material is negative. If we talk about spiritual things and physical things, first view is, right, marbe basar marberima, the more flesh, the more worms, the more nechasim, the more worries, the one who increases possessions, says Hillel, increases worries. In other words, having physical things is problematic. Now, is it saying that all physical acquisitions are negative, or only in the excess? It said marben nechasim, if you have too many possessions. It's not necessarily negating materialism in general. Is it the problem of the pursuit of it, or is it as the greatest success? In other words, is it the idea that you think that you know what the ultimate goal in life is? To be successful, to have a lot of money, wealth. That's what he's lamenting. Or is he lamenting excess, just excess in general? So this is a pursuit. But in any event, you can imagine that there are many statements to this effect of people denigrating certainly any excess in possessions. And we saw the Sforno in one of our very first sessions, who said it's not necessary to make temples of silver and gold, precious stones, right? We saw that Sforno who said that the whole idea of the institution that we call Beit HaMikdash or Mishkan is a compromised institution. It's an institution that is overly gaudy. It's a concession to human frailty that you have to even have all that gold and silver. Along these lines that physical and the spiritual don't get along, here's Rav Tzedek HaKohen really stating this most clearly. Joe, would you read that for us, the idea?
The idea of a high priest going to the Holy of Holies was that he had not a body at all, for he had a complete removal of the physical, and he was left only as a soul, the light of God.
So this is an expression that comes up a lot in Hasidic writings. He's pashtus hagashmius. The gashmi is a word we should learn tonight. Gasham. Gesham, you know, is rain. The gasham is the physical. And the gashmi is something of the physical. Gashmius is the noun for things that are physical. So he's pashtut hagashmiut, meaning people who take off their physical existence, right? How do we know that Moses did not live a physical existence for 40 days? If he didn't eat or drink, he must have been outside, it must have been an out-of-body experience. So he claims that the high priest also had an out-of-body experience. In other words, to have a really spiritual experience, it sounds like you have to disconnect from the physical realm.
But didn't the priest have to actually do things while he was in the Holy of Holies?
It's true. Good point.
So how could he be out of his body?
That's a good point. Maybe it's after he did it. He didn't do much. You know, he sprinkled some blood. He put the smoke there. Maybe after he did it, he did the mitzvah that he had to do. And then that's when you went into ecstasy of some sort, as he said his prayer. Maybe. They say he shouldn't stay too long. The Munkach Rebbe, who first, the Bnei Yisachar, in his Igra de Kala, he says, look, apparently when the Jewish people were communicating with Edomites, or Esau, the children of Esau, about they wanted to pass through, they said, we won't eat or drink. In other words, in the simple text, it's a story about the Jews trying to pass through Esau's territory, and Esau didn't want to let us go through. But in the Hasidic sense, he was telling Esau, who's the ultimate exemplar of the physicality in this world, he says, all the pleasure of this world, page 2, eating, drinking, carnal pleasures, they're part of you, Esav. We're not going to engage in that. Yaakov is engaging things for the next world. Right? And that he engages in these things according to the Torah. If to some extent he's engaged in physicality, it's only according to the Torah. I'm sorry, and through that, he elevates the sparks of holiness which are buried in these physical things, which are the share of Jacob, the portion of Jacob in this world. But a time will come when we worship Hashem only with spirituality, says the B'nai Yisachar. He says, though, a time will come when we'll only worship God. That the Jewish people said to Esav, we're just going to go straight through your territory. We don't want much to do with your physicality. And a time will come when we'll get away from your borders. We'll be away from spiritual, from the physicality entirely. So you find such passages, certainly in Hasidic mystical literature. You find this idea of the negation of the physical as the highest route toward the spiritual.
Are they saying that in the time of the Mashiach we'll just be souls and not bodies?
Right, so that we're going to get to in just a moment. That's right. According to that's true. Everyone agrees that in the next world, in one of the next worlds, we're only souls and not bodies. The question is whether that's the ultimate world, and we'll get back to that in a minute. Now, the Sfat Emet, want to quote, we're going to quote him tonight on both sides of the argument. Now we're going to quote him along the lines that physicality has a certain negativity to it. He says, the children of Israel, it was given to remember the essences and to forget the physical. Forget the physical. As it says, don't turn to your hearts and your eyes so that you shall remember. One of the ideas of Aislinn, sheet here for you, Michael has one. One of the ideas of the tzitzis is to look beyond the physical tzitzis that's in front of you, to look to the sky, and to forget the physical, and to go on to the spiritual. Along those lines, you have the Sfat Emet, says that we want to be saved from physicality. So here he turns to the four elements. You know, what are they again? There's earth, fire, wind, and water. Yeah. Right? So, now, of course, it's always problematic to use those particular things, but let's just relax for a minute and assume that there are four elements. Okay. You could say, we're not talking scientifically, we're talking as a folk observer. In other words, if you look at the world, you say, yeah, not scientifically, it looks like there's fire, there's water. Anyway, so he says, we have to escape from them. Each one of them has an internality, and we have to escape. Would you read that for us for man?
For man,
page 2 in the middle. Go ahead.
For man is made of four elements, and they have an innerness. And we need redemption from the physical, and the main thing is the spirit, which is in terms of voice and speech.
Right. So the ultimate escape from these elements is our ability to speak. The ability to speak is considered the most human faculty that we have. Go ahead.
And the four sides of tzitzis and the four sections of tefillin are the freedom and redemption of Exodus from the four elements. And that's why the sections of tefillin and tzitzis mention Exodus.
Yes. So, could someone do us a favor? If you went into the closet in the men's room, there's a dial there that says chapel. If you just turn like the 3 hours, we would be a little more comfortable. Thank you. Sorry about that. Yes. So he claims that mitzvos that relate to four, whether it's the four cups on the Seder, whether it's the four parts of your tzitzis, he's okay. Whether it's the four sections in our tefillin, it's to get us out of the four realms of the physical. We're trying to escape the physical. That's our spiritual goal, is to escape physicality itself. So that along those lines, Shavuos coming up, right? Julie, would you read that for us about Shavuos? A thought from his grandfather. Go ahead.
As my grandfather and teacher,
Blessed memory,
said, seeing the voices at Sinai, which was above the senses.
There's an idea that somehow we saw the voices. We didn't just hear them, we saw them. Go ahead.
And with the power of the Torah, physicality was removed from them, for can't hear the word of God as human nature, we can hear it because it is dressed in a physical garment, so that they can hear the secret meaning of the Torah, which you can't hear in physicality.
Right. So in other words, they would be removed from physicality so that they could hear. In order to be a prophet, he's claiming, you have to be removed from physicality, and then you can hear that which is hidden within all these physical elements, which is the voice of God. Usually you can't hear it because...
I know it's not in there.
Because, there is one for the chapel. Okay. If you can do it, that would be great.
Okay.
So... So we want to hear the Torah. So on Shavuos, according to this view, we want to sort of remove ourselves from physicality, go into a supernal realm, remove ourselves from the physical world, and that's how we're going to hear the voices on Shavuos. He's not just talking about the Shavuos of old, the original receiving the Torah. He's talking about about this very day on Shavuos. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
If he says we're removing ourselves from physicality, then
yes.
Why does he use here as a metaphor? Because here is physical.
Right. The hearing.
He would use some more philosophical or mental construct.
True. Right. That's
like
true.
Infer.
Right. We're stuck in our language. Right. We're stuck in our own language. We don't have any other word other than to refer to our ears. Right. That's a good point. It's a truly right. That gets to the whole question. When we heard the revelation, could revelation be in words? Because God doesn't speak with God doesn't use a mouth, and we don't need to hear with our ears to hear spiritual. That's an interesting philosophical question. Now, so the first position is that absolutely, if you want to attain spirituality, you have to escape the four elements. You have to escape physicality in order to really be able to hear things. Second approach says that, well, physicality is useful, but it's just the stepchild of spirituality. Meaning, also back to Pirkei Avos, in kemach in Torah. If you don't have anything to eat, you're not going to have much Torah. Or as he puts it here, Matityah Yitzhari points out two things on page 3. He says, number one, food helps us concentrate, right? Students, poor children who don't eat breakfast, they can't concentrate. And there's also a verse in Kohelet, which the rabbis usually reinterpret, but it reads like this. The wisdom of the poor is treated lightly, and his words are not heard. Right? They say, if you want your words to be heard, tell a rich person to say it. All of a sudden, it sounds much more intelligent, right?
Isn't that what Tevye said?
When you're rich, they think you really know.
They think you know. There it is. Great.
They think I really know.
Right? There's a certain rich man that everyone's listening to right now. Right? He can say things that nobody else can say. But in any event...
He's insane.
So there's a certain usefulness of physicality, of wealth, but it's just a stepchild to spirituality. Now, the Mesillas Yesharim is somewhere in between. The Mesillas Yesharim... It's written by the Ramchal, Moshe Chaim Lutzato. His yahrzeit was last Friday. We talked about him at Chal Shudas. And this is his opening words to his famous work of Musar, Mesillas Yesharim. And this work is... these words, you could take it either way, whether he means... you tell me. Is he taking the position that... only if you're fully spiritual can you have a spiritual experience, or that you can have physical, there's a physical pleasure that comes with spiritual experience. Esalim, would you read that for us? Our sages of blessed memory.
Our sages of blessed memory have taught us that man was created for the sole purpose of rejoicing in God and deriving pleasure from the splendor of His presence. For this is true joy and the greatest pleasure that can be found. The place where this joy may truly be derived is the world to come, which was expressly created to provide for it. But the path to the object of our desires is this world. As our sages of blessed memory have said, this world is like a corridor to the world to come.
So what is he saying? Is he saying that, would he be more on the side that we need to escape physicality to achieve spirituality? Or is something else?
That we need to go through it on the way.
Yeah, maybe through it. Yeah. Something you just kind of go through. But also, you could raise the question when he says, our sole purpose is to rejoice in God and divine pleasure. Is that a denial of spirituality, of physicality? Or is there a physical pleasure that he's speaking about that we could somehow derive? Is there a physical spiritual? Well, in the world to come, it can be, but in this world, if he's saying that God wants us to have pleasure in this world, maybe he means physical. Maybe he means a sort of, I don't know if it's a physical, but it's a pleasure we feel with our body.
Yes.
Because right? As Steve said, you can't hear without your ears. At least, like we like to think that way.
According to this, you can and hear words.
Right.
Right.
So, in any event, perhaps Masil Yisharim would be placed in the realm of most spiritualists who would say the purpose in life is to just have a spiritual experience. Now, let's get into the one more interesting question of the position that it's a mitzvah to enjoy. But before we do that, go to the Rambam because this is slightly misplaced. The Rambam, as Steve mentioned, let's understand what's the ultimate goal. So the Rambam says that in the world to come, there's no body or physical form. In the world to come, second paragraph, there's no eating or drinking or sexual relations. The righteous will sit with their crowns on their head and delight with the radiance of the divine presence. But don't think that means a physical delight. He says the righteous sit is metaphorical. The crown is metaphorical. For the Rambam, the ultimate joy for the soul will be purely spiritual. So the Rambam's history of the human being goes like this. You live, person dies, you go to the spiritual world, they come back to a physical world for the revival of the dead, have a wonderful life, live a long and pleasant life, and then they die and go to the spiritual realm. The ultimate goal is the spiritual realm. So you can see a certain negation of the physical, because if he thought the physical was the best, he would have us living in our bodies, living out the rest of our lives in eternal bliss, as someone else does at the end of our discussion. But the Rambam does not.
So also, why does he have us come back into a physical body?
Nobody seems to know the answer to that question. It's that's why some people accuse him of not believing in the revival of the dead. But he said, no, I believe in it, but I've heard this question asked, so then what's the point of it? If the point is to go to the world to come, then what? You've already been in this world, and you've already been in the world, right? Right.
To the world to come, and then you had to come back.
Right.
This terrible world.
Maybe it's just not fair because most of our lives are filled with trouble. So you get to have one life that's perfect.
So different. If you had been there and knew, now you don't know. Then you know what you could do. You're there.
Oh, yes. One second, Joe's talking. One second.
You know that there's another world. You know there's another world. You're sure.
Let's have one conversation at a time. When you come back, yes. Joe's saying that the death in the second time around would not really be as painful or scary, because everyone would know what it was like in the next world.
And so when we come back in bodies, we're going to remember what it was like to be totally souls, or is it going to be wiped out like it is now?
Right, that's a good question. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that clearly discussed, but yes, if it was, that would be true. It's a good, great exchange. Now, by the way, not on your sheet, but also the Rambam also says about reward and punishment. Last week's parsha said, you know, if you do good things, you'll be rewarded. So we mentioned in the Shabbos announcements, which you have over here if you'd like to see, that the Rambam says that why is the Torah getting into all this physical reward? Who cares about that? The Rambam is more of a spiritualist. He says, what do you need the physical rewards for? Are you going to have more sheep? What do we care about that? So he says, no, but if you have more sheep, then it's a stepchild, right? If you have more sheep, then you'll be able to study Torah more. So that's the purpose of reward. You should be free to study Torah. Okay, moving along. Now let's get to the next view. We had the view that spirituality needs to stand distinct from physicality. Physicality gets in the way. You need to get out of it, escape it. Second view, well, it has certain uses, so, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, you have to endure certain physical things. It helps you in the spiritual realm as well. But finally, we have the view that, no, it's a mitzvah to enjoy, it's a mitzvah to use the body to reach spirituality. So, for instance, a very simple thing, the laws of Shabbos, right? Shabbos is supposed to be for God, and we know, you can look here, you know, you're supposed to, two dimensions from the prophets are in the second paragraph, honor, second to last paragraph, honor and pleasure, right? What is meant by honor? It's a mitzvah to wash your face and your hands, right? You wrap yourself in tzitzit. The next page, page four, people, right? Number three, halacha three, you should wear a clean garment, et cetera, in another paragraph seven that's not here, talks about having fatty meats and delicious meats and things like that. What? Sorry? The extra meal, three meals, having wine at all the meals. The Rambam says even Shalosh Shudas should have wine. We don't do that, but that's what he says. So, it could be an idea, you know, for the next Shalosh Shudas. But in any event, and then Yom Tov, surely Yom Tov should be very spiritual, but there we find a debate. When it comes to Yom Tov, we find a debate. So I took the translation off an analytical translation. If you look here at the bottom of page four, it says the following. Let's see. Who wants to read that for us? Julie, would you read that for us again? On Yom Tov, a person should eat. Go ahead.
On Yom Tov, a person must eat and drink or learn.
Ah, so you don't have to eat and drink. You could just learn. You could just learn on Yom Tov. It says you should rejoice. You could just go ahead.
Says one should divide the day. Half is to eat and drink, and half is to learn.
You gotta. There's no option of only what? Only learning. You have to at least do eating half the day. All right, and then they go on to say that there's a contradiction. Are you supposed to make the day for yourselves? Are you supposed to make the day for God? So one says you have a choice of you, for yourself or for God. The other says you should split the day between you and God. However, turn to line 5a. Read that. Rebbe Lezer says what?
All agree that on Shavuos, at least part of the day must be for you.
So strangely enough, Shavuos, which commemorates what?
The
getting the Torah, which before we said you could only hear the Torah if you were removed from
your body.
That holiday should be celebrated how? There must be a physical component to your Shavuos. You have to have cheesecake or something like that, right? Go ahead.
Shabbos, at least part of the day, must be for you. What is the reason?
Karas Shabbat. Declare
Shabbat delight.
Right, and then etc. Purim, era of the eve of Yom Kippur. There are certain times. Now, the question is, why does that make any sense? The most spiritual day of the year, when we got the Torah, that's when we should have physicality. So the Beit Halevi, an ancestor of Rabbi Joseph B. Salvezik, on page 5, says, Julie, will you continue, please? Why?
This teaches that...
No. Second paragraph in English. Why is?
Why is the fact that the Torah was given on Shavuos a reason for having to partake of meals on that day? The Beit Halevi answers that since the angels argued not to give us the Torah, and the counter-argument was that Moshe said that only humans need physical laws, so on this day we must fulfill physical laws.
Right. The angels said, don't give the Torah to the Jews. They're mere mortals. So God, so Moses said, well, look, what does it say in the Torah, God? So God said, oh, it says don't steal. He said, you guys don't, you angels don't steal anything. So since the whole idea of Torah is that we're so physical, we need the Torah. So on Shavuos is the one day we should get down and dirty, right? Sorry?
Physical pleasure.
Right, the physical pleasure is for Shavuos.
If this was remembered of the wheat harvest, which preceded Shavuos, which was the original, we brought food.
Right. Well, but each one seems to have a different harvest. You're right. Pesach doesn't have a harvest. But, right, well, Pesach is associated with the barley waving, but it's not called the holiday of barley. It might be. That's a question. It's called Chodesh Ha'aviv. Chag Ha'aviv. Shamor Chodesh Ha'aviv. You should observe the holiday of Aviv, which might mean of the barley reaping. It could be. But the problem is that Sukkot is also referred to as a day of rejoicing and of a harvest of sorts, gathering in. So you'd have to explain why it was different from Sukkot. Why would they single it out? Well, I mean, I would agree with you as far as emphasis. The emphasis for the last 2,000 years of Shavuos has been the Torah rather than the harvest, because we don't have a harvest that we feel. But the calendar does work out pretty well with the Shavuos. Although, they say Shavuos is not the day. A lot of people have trouble with this line. It says Shavuos is the day we got the Torah. No, according to the Talmud, we got the Torah on the 7th of Sivan. But Shavuos is celebrated on the 6th of Sivan. So that's also a question. But moving along, the key thing here is that the more it's related to Torah, the more it has to be
physical.
Physical.
The more it's related to Torah.
Right. Because the Torah is all about physical. Right. It's all about a real human being who has parents, who has lust and desires and corruptions and containing all that. That's what it's all about. Right. So therefore, it's a salvation. So it's a very clever thing of a salvation's ancestor his great-grandfather or something, to connect that Talmud and Shabbat. It talks about the angels. Connect that with the idea of that Shavuot specifically is the day when you should have some festive meal. Others want to explain that, well, it's very simple. You know, it's a day we got the Torah. It's like a siyum. You always, when you finish a book of the Talmud, or the Torah, you know, you accept on yourself to do more. You always rejoice, or as Rav Yosef, I've been quoting the last few days, Rav Yosef said, you know, if not for Shavuos, when we got the Torah, I would just be Yossi. Now I'm Rabbi Yosef because I got the Torah. So, in other words, we're all better for getting the Torah, so you got to rejoice. Something like that. That would be the more simple explanation. Now, the Sfasemas, we already quoted him on the spiritual side. Now we'll quote him on the physical side. Right? Just a two-liner here. In everything, there's a point of life from God. Now, this is a Hasidic mystical idea, that there's a point of life in everything, but it's hidden. And we need to battle all week to find it. And then we're in the middle of page 5. And then on Shabbat, it's revealed that God enlivens all, that God brings life to everything. So he's claiming that we need to find the spiritual in every single thing. And we'll see that in some other Hasidic commentaries as well. But just for a moment, we'll take a look at the idea of the mitzvah of Ona.
Did you just say we need to find the spiritual or the physical?
I'm not sure what I said, but we need to find the spiritual in every physical thing. That's what he means. There's a hidden spirituality in every single physical thing. Our work during the week, what's our work? To find the spiritual in the physical. Right? So friends, if you're working, and you're working during the week, you say, well, what does that got to do with my work? If you're working during the week, and you do it ethically and honestly, and you engage in the human activity of work, which perhaps itself is a mitzvah, or you support your family, which is a mitzvah, then you are elevating the physical. It's one way of looking at it. Now, just as another example, we certainly know how Jews, we don't need many lessons here about how eating and drinking is clearly part of Judaism, and it's all of our spiritual events, right? We know the jokes about our holidays are all about, you know, they wanted to kill us, so we were saved, and let's eat. And we know that there's no Jewish holiday without some special delicacy from Eastern Europe or from modern times, and we all understand that. But there's also the more physical aspect of Ona, between a man and a wife. Also, we recently had a speaker who got into it more in detail with a women's group. But here's just very briefly. There's apparently, Asher was telling me that Rabbi Ezra Malam is very popular now. You can find him online. It's in Hebrew, but Panine Halacha discusses modern halacha and modern perspective. So he's quoting various things, and I'm sure we could quote this from any number of sources. Here's a modern source, a complete...
No, I'm sorry to be...
We're going to see in a minute. Time. Giving time to your spouse.
Oh, okay.
A complete person lives with love and joy with his mate. For a man is not complete without his wife, and a wife is not complete without her husband. And the main unity they have expresses itself during the mitzvah of ona, which is what? Time. Giving time for your spouse. Through which they unite completely, spiritually and physically, as one, and their marriage is complete, and should be done with great joy. There is not a greater joy in this world, and is the joy of the next world. What is the next world?
It's like the joy.
Right. So, yes. So, there's the idea that even the most physical of acts is also, it's a mitzvah, it's an ideal part of life, and it's part of our spiritual life, and similar to the ultimate pleasure in the world to come. Okay. Now just a few Hasidic citations that bring out this idea of that our work in life is not just to be spiritual, but to bring out this spiritual within the physical. For instance, page 6, Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin started out as a non-Hasidic rabbi. He became a Hasidic rabbi. He says, what do you do after Yom Kippur? There's a mitzvah to eat after Yom Kippur. So after a whole day of sort of leaning toward the first part of our class, that, oh, Yom Kippur, it's all about hispashtus hagashmius, of escaping physicality. Then you go and you eat, because the physical bread you eat after Yom Kippur will have in it the life of holiness because of the Torah. So there's an idea that the meal not only before Yom Kippur is a mitzvah, to eat before Yom Kippur, that's the yuntiv meal, but also eating after Yom Kippur is not just to break your fast, but it's a mitzvah. Why? Because you do it as part of being forgiven, and you do it in the spirit of holiness and Torah, and therefore that bread will have in it a life of holiness. It has a spirit in it. Or the Sfas Emes, who says, in all matters in this world, there's a hidden light, similar to the next world, but it's enclosed in this world. According to the work he does in this world, to not cling to the physical. You don't want to get stuck. And there's sort of a decoy. We see physical things. Our job is to bring out the spiritual, and we sometimes get distracted by the externality. I guess you don't want to get stuck on the kugel or the challenge. You've got to get inside. Get inside. The Noam Elimelech, another Hasidic Rebbe, earlier Rebbe, the famous Rebbe that he sing songs about, the Rebbe Elimelech. This is why God brought us to the land of Israel. For there is potential to elevate the sparks of holiness. Apparently, Israel is particularly well endowed to be able to elevate its spaces. That's how he reads the story of the spies. He sent spies. He said, look, you got all these sparks of holiness there. They're just coming out of the woodwork. It's everywhere. But it would be better if someone could come and vacuum the floor first. And if someone could come and help bring out the sparks a little bit, then when everybody gets there, the sparks will be flying like crazy. But instead, they got there and they messed it all up. And it didn't work out at all. But that was the idea, to bring out the sparks.
Don't you feel something in the air when you're in Israel?
Yes.
It's there. It's just a different land.
Yes, what's amazing is you meet Gentiles who have the same feeling, that there's something, a pull that Israel has, that they feel like they're going home. Everyone, it's amazing. Amazing. So, now, of course, if you were a philosopher, you'd say, well, wait a second. You know, we've talked about this tension. Well, you know, how can a physical place have something spiritual in it? That makes it a form of, that there's some sort of, what do they call that? It's a totem of some sort. It's you're worshiping something physical. What's the difference between a pantheist and a pagan and a Jew saying that there's holiness inside their kugel? Now, if a Jew is doing it as a mitzvah, he says, I'm going to fulfill this mitzvah with this kugel. So then I'm not worshiping the kugel. I'm worshiping God by eating it. But when you get to the Hasidic realm, there is a critique you could make that the holiness comes from something else. Rabbi Soloveitchik struggled with this. In some of his writings, he writes that it's nonsense. There's no spirituality in something. In other writings, he says Some things have a spiritual endowment. So there's a contradiction in Rabbi Salvation's writings. But the resolution could be the following. A normative revolution without resorting to Kabbalah, mysticism, and Hasidus is as follows. When you take a physical thing and you do the Word of God with it, then that following of God's command, that mitzvah, that's what brings out the holiness. In other words, it's since there's a mitzvah to live in Israel and to conquer Israel, and to, therefore, and Jews have lived in Israel, they've come and they've done that spiritual work, therefore when you walk in their footsteps or when you have the opportunity to do that, then since you were engaged in a mitzvah, that the spiritual potential of the place comes out. Moving along. Right. But, right. So, right, it's more appealing from a spiritual point of view, but on the other hand, it's less appealing from a philosophical point of view. Moving along. The Be'er Mayim Chaim is an interesting Hasidic Rebbe. He was the Rebbe Chaim of Chernovitz. He says as follows. Steve, would you read this for us? In the bottom of page 6, why did
Hashem give man such lowly things that animals have, such as eating?
Right. Now, by the fact that animals do it, it must be lowly. The human being has faculties that are similar to angels. That's good. There are other things that are similar to animals. And, you know, for those anatomists in the room, you know, that's pretty much everything about us is similar to animals. So, why do we have all that stuff? Go ahead. Just to bring home how lowly eating is, go ahead.
The Shla.
Yes.
Says,
Shla was a great mystic, Rabbi Hurwitz. Go ahead.
That when the Talmud says that we should be lucky to have a bathroom near our table to remember not to eat too much.
Right. He says, in other words, Talmud says that, you know, you're very lucky if you have a bathroom near your table, which, you know, in those days would be a very big luxury to have a bathroom near your table. What does that mean? That we should put the bathroom near our table and we should connect. We should say, look, if we eat too much, we just have to go to the bathroom more. You know, that we should limit our physicality. Go ahead.
But he wanted us to lift up the food by elevating the sparks of holiness spread throughout the world in all physical things, and to bring them back to their father. And this is a great joy, like a beloved son who runs away from captivity and comes to his father.
Since we know that God created everything, including matter itself, so everything is a creation of God. If you want to get mystical, then you say God is in everything. Okay. Well, at least you can say God creates everything. So he said, but what is it? It's just a piece of kugel. But if you could make a bracha on it, eat it on Shabbos, etc., etc., buy it ethically with the money that you earned, etc., then you bring that creation back to its creator, and there's as much joy in bringing a physical thing to the spiritual realm as there is when a son who was taken in captivity comes out and you get to give him a big hug. So that's the joy in bringing spirituality to physicality. There's a tremendous joy to God in that.
Where did this come from?
Mm-hmm.
We go to the bathroom. We are elevating something that's very low. Judaism is always trying to elevate the physical in everything.
Person goes to the bathroom and realizes that God has created us in this amazing way, that as it says in the bracha, we perhaps make the bracha coming out of the bathroom, we make this bracha referring to the miracle of digestion and excretion and all that. Then, yeah. As a matter of fact, the process of digestion they view as part of this whole thing. We'll see that in a moment. Let's see. Yes, let's take a look at the next page, some other elements of this whole philosophy of elevation and of the sparks. Steve, keep reading. Go ahead. Page 7. Wait a second. Let me just see one thing. Yes. Go ahead. Yes.
When he realizes how low these things are and he tries to keep away from them, that is how he elevates them. But first you have to make a bracha.
But there are different elements, says the Be'er Mayim Chaim, Rav Chernovitz. He says there are two elements. Number one, we talked before about you want to elevate it, but one way is to keep away from it. As we go back to our first point, that physicality is negative, so we keep away from it. But you also can elevate it by making a bracha on it. So there's two elements. Now this I thought this was really...
You can
really,
elevate, you can bring out the sparks in something by not doing anything?
By realizing that it...
By keeping away from it.
It's hard. Yeah, you're right. There's a certain contradiction there. But I think... Notice some things, the thing to do with it is to stay far away from it. You know, that's the bracha on it, you know, as the Tevye would say.
Oh, gotcha.
As a matter of fact, they say, what is treif? Treif is something that has no potential. If you made a bracha on it, it still wouldn't help. There's a debate as to whether you should make a bracha if you had a treif sandwich. But most people would say that it has no potential. So the way you elevate that is by staying away from it. But listen to, yes. Listen to this. He's Sod V'Shorosh Avodah, an interesting sefer, Alexander, and he died in 1794. It's kind of an early work. Let's see what he says. Joe, would you read that for us?
Since the holy spark mm-hmm. fell so low, we need to go up from inanimate to growing, to living, to speaking.
Okay, right. So that, those are the four levels, right? So you have inanimate objects, you have growing objects like
grass
and plants, trees. And then you have living things like animals. And then to speaking, which is us, right? So the sparks fell through. So let's consider those levels. The sparks of holiness, they went from heaven, from God, and they fell all the way down to the inanimate. So they were really in bad shape. Go ahead.
And by eating it, we treat the process of life.
So there's two elements. Number one, when you eat something that comes from any one of those other realms, we do eat some things that are inanimate, right? Let's see.
Water.
Yeah, good.
What was that? I didn't
hear. Water.
Because plants are living.
It's not organic, right? They're right. The sisterhood used to put wax in their cookies, so that's inanimate.
Indeed?
Yes, this is a secret ingredient. Any event, so number one, as we eat things from the inanimate to the growing, to the speaking, to the living, we eat those things, we elevate them. So poor cow, he was just on level three, now he's on level four, right? Now he's level four. And also, there's another thing, that the digestive process does the separating. It's a, right? The part that stays in me, that becomes the thing that's elevated from animal to human. It becomes part of a living, speaking creature. And the other part, that must be the part that has no purpose. Now, spiritually, not just biologically, right? But spiritually, that the part that's excreted must be the part that's, or it could be a metaphor for the idea that we need to do birur. We need to separate things that have potential, that don't have potential. Go ahead.
At Sadiq, this bracha separates out the holiness, and this is what you should think of when you eat.
So, number one, the Sadiq does that. And by the way, what should you think of? You should think of separating out the holiness. Go ahead.
When the animal's time is up, and it was...
Shechted, slaughtered, yeah.
Uncle
Yaakov. A sheikh. You had an uncle who was a sheikh? Oh, okay.
Properly, and it did what it could as an animal. It is now elevated by the speaker.
Speaker meaning not someone who's giving a speech, but the human being who's at the level of someone who speaks. Continue.
And all the redemption depends on this to clarify all the sparks of holiness to go back to their roots.
So, these mystics would say that if we can finish all this avodah habirur, all this selecting out and sorting out of finding the holy things, getting rid of the things that don't have potential, and if we could making a bracha on everything, we could save the whole world. That's what it's all about. So it's a whole philosophy of elevating the physical. Shemi Shmuel points out that at every wedding we make a similar bracha, and you can picture based on what we said before that why we say this, particularly at a wedding, right? Most people might think of a wedding as a rather physical kind of thing. And we open the wedding by saying Shakol bara lichvodo. Three words: Shakol bara lichvodo. That everything is for God's glory. the gathering of the hundreds of people who are there, for God's glory, the wedding, God's glory, physical relationship, God's glory, everything about it. And he makes an audacious statement, an Israelite can make all physical things holy. We, the Jewish people, were given that task. Obviously, I suppose, I don't know all the rules of this. Seems that a Gentile also, who acts properly and does the right thing, should be able to bring things up. But I guess it's particularly our role to bring holiness to everything. That's in general, that's our role. And the prophets, light unto the nations, we want to bring light up the whole world. We need partners among the nations as well. Okay, the Saba of Kelm, and also the Maharal later in the other pages, they all talk about critics. You're going to see it on the bottom of the next page, middle of the next page, in page 9 as well, and also here in the bottom of page 7, that there are people who don't get it. It's everything we've been talking about. The idea that you could take the physical and you could elevate it. A lot of people don't get it. So, Joe, would you read that for us? Philosophers. Bottom of page 7, philosophers.
I think there's nothing to the physical. We say it's God's will to worship him with the lowly to the cherubim. The latter has his feet on the ground, not to leave this world in order to worship God. By this, all the physical act can become holy.
So according to this, why Jacob, who is the ultimate Jew, the original Jew, why does he have a ladder on the ground? And why is it going to heaven? To tell us this fundamental point about Jewish spirituality, that our job is to elevate the physical, period, in the report. Continue. Joe, will you continue? They ask, in the middle of page 8.
They ask, how can one be spiritually successful through discipline, such as the details of the Torah, such as damages of oxen?
Now, this is a very strong critique. You understand that most yeshiva students spend most of their time on monetary matters, right? Asher is deeply engaged in Bav Metzia, Bav Basra this year. He was talking about buying boats and buying houses and land and people lost objects and he's talking about, and that's his year in the yeshiva. They'll go for another year and right, and they're going to talk about what happens if you do this on Shabbos, then on Shabbos, all physical stuff. How can this be spiritual? Shouldn't we focus on the spiritual concepts, philosophy, right? God, right? Theology, theosophy, the notion of God. What is God, right? Why are we focusing on pits in the ground and people falling in and that kind of thing? Continue.
I think it is best to deal with fundamentals of faith. For the main thing is the soul which lasts in this world. There is no greater error than this.
Right, so this idea of people who don't understand this whole message we've been talking about, of the physical spirituality, they miss the whole point. So let me just read this a little bit. He quotes from the Zohar, which says, as wine is only a vessel to the Torah, so the Torah is only the garment. Now, this is a radical statement in the Zohar, that everything in the Torah is just a garment. So you think it's talking about oxen, goring oxen, and it's a garment for something else. There's something hidden spiritual. Now, based on that, you could get away from traditional learning and you could say, well, let's just go cut to the chase. Why talk about the oxen? Let's talk about the hidden meanings. So this rabbi, he rails against it, and this is already the Maharal. And on this page 8 is the Maharal. And he says, But his basic answer is, a mitzvah cannot stand naked without its garment. In other words, yes, the Torah is a garment to the spirituality, but he who thinks he can pluck out the spirituality and take away the garment, it's not going to work. The mitzvah is a container for this spirituality. Maybe I didn't see him say it explicitly, but it's sort of like, if you take away the barrel, you're not going to have the wine. If there's no barrel, there's no wine, right? So it's not accessible. But it is a strange, think about it. It's an strange religion. We spend a lot of time talking about physical stuff, right? You go to a lot of shuls, they're talking about when you shake your lulav, should you hold it like this or like that? And right, and you put in your tefillin, should you put the box over here or over there? We spend a lot of time talking about physical things. Very foreign to somebody from India or a Buddhist or, right? This is right. You think you could cut to the chase? So we claim that that these discussions are vessels for something very spiritual, and because they're talking about something physical. Yes.
But it's interesting. Did the rabbis ever decide it was more important studying that physical material or studying a god, or did they ever conclude what was more important, or Hoth or Magadha, or
study
the laws or
the right. Right, I think most people, most mystics would affirm that you have to study the basic things first and things like that. That there's no Kabbalah without Talmud and things like that. Yeah. But yes, clearly there are many people who spend most of their time on Zohar and things like that. It's true. Right.
Without the body, the soul is a ghost. If you have no body,
okay.
You have to have a container for the soul.
But you're right. But this is the whole question this evening. Should I just close my eyes, imagine myself without a body, and go into that realm for as much time as I can? Would that be the best activity? Or is it better to try to bring spirituality to physical things? And of course, that involves... Well, there can be some. I can contemplate God or... oh yes, according to the Rambam, figuring out God is a mitzvah. Yes, to know God. To know God. He claims you could know. He claims you could. He all says the modern philosophers say you can know God. So. Apparently there are some modern philosophers who do think you could prove it. But in any event, and again the same idea later on in the Maharal in different passage. People question physical mitzvah's value for the soul, or they seek only the mitzvah's meaning. And we believe, that page 9, that God made the mitzvahs for our bodies and our souls. Our mayor of Frischlin, he says, through the physical we can achieve in the upper world lots of different things, for this is the purpose of life. Even through earthly pleasures, we can see the words of the Torah. As we engage in earthly pleasures, we can see the holy words of the Torah. As it says, and they saw God, and they ate and drank. Right? He believes that verse can be read, going back to our first question, that verse can be read in a positive way. That through their eating and drinking, they saw the letters of the Torah. That's what you do on Shavuos. You eat and you drink, and through it you see the letters of the Torah.
But it says they saw God first. And then they ate and drank.
That's true.
It doesn't say they ate and drank, and through that they saw God.
True. 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 Perhaps you can turn around, but it's a good point. Yes?
When a Jew does a mitzvah, the angel is created.
Right.
Yeah.
Follows them all the way to the next world, yes. Right.
There's a physicality. Just doing a mitzvah, whether it's something physical mitzvah or nothing, it's a spiritual aspect.
Right. Obviously, one of the most physical mitzvahs is you give a piece of bread to the poor, right? So, right. It clearly, there's nothing Eastern about that, but clearly we all understand that that's a path to spirituality. A few quick comments from this rabbi of Dinuv. He says, "Seek God where He is found." That's what it says in Isaiah. What does that mean? That in all creations there is a garment of godliness. There's a garment around the godliness. Or the idea of the whole Baal Shem Tov, the whole world is filled with His glory. What is glory? Your glory, your honor, is your clothing. The Talmud says, you don't call them your clothing, call it your honor, because it gives us honor. So he says the whole world is just God's clothing. The whole world is filled with God's clothing. And underneath the clothing is God everywhere. Or there's a verse that reads as follows, Exodus 23, and you shall worship Hashem your God. Some say that's the source that we should daven every day, and He will bless your bread and your water. Why? What does that mean? So it says the Baal Shem Tov, because when the Torah is set at the table, if you worship God, what does that mean? When you eat you say some Torah. So there's the idea of saying a Dvar Torah at a meal. Or we say the Shir Malos, so we say something. Before we talked about making a bracha at the table. And And then God will bless it. And the Torah is the spirit of that physicality of the table. So the Dvar Torah, we talked about brachos, we talked about realizing that you're a human creature, elevating the lower levels, and we also, now he talks about the idea of a Dvar Torah at a table, also turns that animal, right? The cow doesn't have a Dvar Torah at his table. So that's where we elevate it from the physical to the spiritual. Finally, on our last page, the Kutzker says that Kutzker was a very insightful, brilliant rabbi who, if you look at his picture, he had these eyes that sort of burn the person who saw them. And here you can see how sharp he was. So he says, God has no shortage of angels. He doesn't need you to be an angel. He's got plenty of angels already. Right? You want to sit and close, the mystic wants to sit and close his eyes and contemplate the universe. He's got angels already. Right? That's what they're for. But he desires holy people to bring sparks of holiness to this world. So if you ask the question, this answers the question, why? We understand, so far we said, there's an idea in Judaism that we want to bring out the spiritual from the physical. Why? Let's just cut to some of the philosophers said, let's just cut to the chase. Let's just go right to the philosophy and to the spirituality. So he says, that's what angels do. They deal purely in the spiritual realm. Our job is to be holy people, an actual people, with the emphasis on being people. So for instance, one of our prayers that we say over a bread snack, I have it on the wall there next to Jason, talks about that we thank God for the land of Israel, and we hope to go to Israel one day, and there we will eat of its fruits, and we will benefit from its goodness. So some rabbis said, "What? We're gonna eat the fruits? Why do we want to? Why is that important to eat the fruits? We're not going to Israel in order to eat the fruits of Israel. That's not the point of Israel, to eat the fruits." So they say, "No, they agree with Esteline." They say, "Well, let's go back a second. How come there are stories in the Talmud of rabbis who said that the fruits in northern Israel, Genesar, some old city in northern Israel, were so good that they used to take bags of them and they got stomach aches from it? Why does the Talmud tell a story like that? To make fun of the rabbis? They're talking about their tastes in food." So he says, the point is that the rabbis had a sense that by eating the fruits in Israel, we could elevate the whole world. He says that the fruits of Israel add wisdom, just like the air in Israel adds wisdom, and certainly the fruits of Israel add wisdom.
So the fruits of Israel elevate us,
right.
So we don't elevate it.
They
elevate us.
It's probably both.
We elevate something which elevates the food. And the food goes into you, and it elevates you.
Yes, there is an implication here in some of it. Yes, could be. Yes.
There's a great distinction between Judaism and other religions. Tremendous. The other religions, the body is evil, everything.
Yeah, Rabbi Salvation, as we'll see in a moment, Rabbi Salvation, in the work Halachic Man, he tries to distinguish between the spiritual typology in general, whether that's the monk or something like that who tends to go off in another world. But just the religious persona in general. If, you know, one of your kids goes off and he decides he's going to be super spiritual, the religious persona, that gene type, you know, that will often go away from the physical. Right? And you contrast that with halachic man who's very interested in stuff. Because, you know, it's mincha, we care when the sun sets so we can daven mincha, and the marv, and this, and we're very physical.
Which is a priestly blessing. And the first one is physical. It bless you with things, and keep them. The next one is illuminate Torah. Mm-hmm. It's spiritual. And the third, if you don't have both, you don't have peace. It builds. So there's no... Judaism doesn't condemn physical. That's how we're blessed.
And we're going to get to that as the final punchline in 1 second. But right before we get to that punchline, we have 2 minutes. Just two things. In the 2 minutes. Number one, I want to mention that the Ramban says that therefore the ultimate, in Ramban's view, the ultimate goal is the world to come. The ultimate goal would be a physical world in which there really is eating and drinking. So, philosophically, maybe it's nice to think like the Rambam that, oh, in the end, we're all spirits. But for Ramban, it's maybe a more Jewish idea that in the end, we're all here in our bodies. That's the world to come. What? And that sounds Muslim, you know. Oh, that's tough luck. That's what it is. In the world to come, we will live forever in our bodies. That's the Jewish spirituality. That's the Jewish world to come. But finally, since you mentioned the idea of Judaism versus other religions, Joe, why don't you read that last passage for us? Rabbi Joseph B. Salvajic, Halachic Man.
The halacha is not...
Unless, Michael, would you like... I didn't have a chance. Would you like to read?
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry.
The Halachic Man on page 10.
The page 10 at the bottom. Well, the last paragraph.
Okay. The halacha is not at all concerned with the transcendent world. Halachic man prefers the real world to the transcendent existence. Because here in this world, man is given the opportunity to create, act, accomplish, while in the world to come, he is powerless to change anything at all. The task of the religious individual is bound up in the performance of commandments. And this performance is confined to this world, the physical concrete reality, the clamorous, tumultuous life pulsating with exuberance and strength.
So now, this is a very radical book. He's claiming that there's a certain typology called the halachic man, who believes that all spirituality should come through the halakha, which is through physical things. So there's an extreme expression of this ideology we're talking about tonight. Whereas, you know, most people fall somewhere in between. Obviously, the Sfasem, as many of the mystics we read, we saw that they were waffling. On the one hand, they want to get out of the body, and the other hand, they're trying to elevate things in the body. So that's typical of many spiritualists. But for the purely halachic man, which was his grandfather, not Rabbi Salvajic himself, but his grandfather, pure halachic man, the Briskers, there's only the physical world. We're not interested in contemplating anything up there. We want to contemplate all the stuff down here. It's where all the great magic happens. Whether you take that extreme view or not, the idea that embedded within Judaism is this unique idea that is somewhat Jewishly unique. It's unique just without any other religion. It's a unique idea that you'll want to look for the spiritual. You know where you find it? In the physical. And that is what I wanted to communicate. That's a unique Jewish spirituality. And it's so it's interesting in terms of boundaries. We've been talking about cutting edge. The cutting edge of Jewish spirituality is the connection between the material and the spiritual. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. Nice series.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Steve.